On This Week in Enterprise Tech, we have Mr. Curtis Franklin and Mr. Brian Chi here today. Now, managed desktops, desktop as a service, and VDI are trending, and organizations are going to need to decide if they want to move to them. Questions are, do they solve organizational IT challenges? Do they cost less than the traditional methods? While our host roundtable is going to take you through their origin and their future. You definitely shouldn't miss this episode. Twyatt on the set.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twyatt. This Week in Enterprise Tech, episode 466, recorded October 22nd, 2021. Virtually the best Twyatt yet. This episode of This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you by Thinks Canary. Detect attackers on your network while avoiding irritating false alarms. Get the alerts that matter. 10% off and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Go to canary.tools/twit and enter the code TWIT in the How Do You Hear About Us box. And by Bitwarden. Get the password manager that offers a robust and cost-effective solution that can drastically increase your chances of staying safe online. Get started with a free trial of Teams or Enterprise Plan, or get started for free across all devices as an individual user at bitwarden.com/twit. And by CrowdStrike. CrowdStrike harnesses the power of every click, every action, and every ally to grow stronger and stop cyber threats before they can stop you. Join the fight and experience the power of Falcon Platform for free today at CrowdStrike.com/twit. Welcome to Twyatt, This Week in Enterprise Tech, the show that is dedicated to you, the enterprise professional, the IT pro, and that geek who just wants to know how this world's connected. I'm your host, Louis Maresca, your guide to this big, giant world of the enterprise. I definitely can't guide you by myself. I need to bring in the professionals, the experts in their field. Sorry, the very own Mr. Curtis Franklin. He's a senior analyst at Omdia and the man that has the pulse on the enterprise. Curtis, how are you doing, my friend?
Oh, Lou, doing very well. I'm getting ready for a season of webinars. I started out having one. Now I've got two webinars and two virtual events coming up in the next few weeks, and getting ready for all of them. Some of them on security, some of them on training, some of them on training about security. It's going to be an exciting fall all around.
I'm looking forward to that. Now, for webinars, how social are they compared to just being at the show? Do you feel like you get more social in webinars because you have a lot more people to kind of be part of the conversation, or do you feel like you get it more in person?
Well, I would say that the interactions tend to be more in-depth in person. You can have a conversation with someone face-to-face, but you can have a broader set of conversations quite easily during the virtual event. So, you know, I think we're reaching a point where each of them can be really useful. Each of them can be really valuable. You just have to go into each one with a somewhat different expectation, use it for what it is, rather than trying to make one into the other.
Makes sense. Yeah, Microsoft Ignite's coming up in November, and we're doing this virtual again. So we'll see how it goes. A lot of open chats and side discussions and opportunities to talk with customers. So I think it'll be fun. Well, speaking of pulses, we not only have Mr. Brian Chi, he's been an expert in just about everything, and he's also the net architect at Sky Fiber. Chibert, well, what projects are you focusing on now?
Right now, the hammers above my head with the roofers putting a metal roof on my house.
I was going to say, that's not a euphemism for something, right? Hammers on your head.
Well, I tell you what, though. Next week, I get to be on my very first virtual event. It's actually going to be on SASE. And I'm going to be on one of the panels talking about the network ramifications, and it's going to be all interesting.
Awesome. Look forward to that as well. Well, speaking about looking forward to, we have a lot to talk about this week in the enterprise, so we definitely should get started. This week, we're gonna actually do a host roundtable, and we're going to talk a little bit about virtual desktop because it's been growing in adoption, and it seems that managed desktops just might be the wave of the future. We'll get into the big discussion and take you through the entire landscape. But before we get to all that, we do have to get into this week's exciting news blips. The first news blip seems to take a page out of a movie script. Hackers really do seem to think life is a movie. According to some researchers, a criminal organization believed to be have built the software that shut down U.S. fuel pipeline has set up a fake company to actually recruit potential employees. That's right. The fake company is using the name Bastion Secure, and it's one of those names you might not bat an eye at when it comes to your LinkedIn stream. But the company has a professional looking website, and it says it sells cybersecurity services. But the site's operator is actually a well-known hacking group called Fin7. And you may actually know Fin7 already. It's the group that hacked hundreds of businesses, stolen more than 20 million customer records, and written the software used to hack that disrupted the gas line delivery in parts of the southeastern U.S. Now, the Bastion Secure website, which uses the logo BS, seems appropriate, has listed jobs that are technical in nature and appear in similar to work that would be performed at any security company. Now, it includes programmers, system administrators, and people who are good at finding bugs in software. Now, the attempt to impersonate a legitimate company for recruiting purposes represents a new development by purveyors of ransomware. Now, Fin7 has hacked thousands of computer systems and for years focused on stealing and selling credit card information. The 70-person group caused more than $3 billion in damages to companies and individuals, federal prosecutors actually say here. The group has recently shifted from stealing credit information to ransomware, and it now manages a ransomware service and conducts intrusions to deploy the file encrypting software. Now, Fin7 marketed its ransomware business under the name DarkSide, but more recently has called it Black Matter. Now, Bastion Secure isn't the first fake company Fin7 has used to recruit employees. In fact, in August 2015, it used another fake secure cybersecurity company called Combi Security. On Monday, three federal agencies, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, the Federal Bureau of Investigations, and the National Security Agency published an alert explaining how companies can protect themselves from Black Matter and warning them in recent months that the ransomware could, quote, has targeted multiple U.S. critical infrastructure entities, including the two U.S. food and agricultural sectors. The alert contains ways for your organization to protect yourself. Definitely take a look at the list. As we all know, education is definitely the first step to having a good fight.
Well, tech vendors are beginning to target enterprise ESG reporting. Now, if you're not familiar with the TLA or three-letter acronym of ESG, don't worry. You're going to have a lot of opportunities to figure out what it is. Environmental, social, and governance ESG reporting is hitting the mainstream as two big tech vendors this week have announced efforts to help enterprise organizations manage their efforts with regard to this new and major trend. ServiceNow has announced a new integrated ESG solution powered by its Now digital workflow platform. The technology is designed to help companies work on strategies from enhancing diversity and inclusion to reducing carbon emissions to enabling business resilience, all of these across the enterprise. ServiceNow has also announced the expansion of its alliance relationship with KPMG to deliver ESG-focused solutions and services. Separately, Google Cloud this week launched Carbon Footprint, a new product that gives customers a view of the gross carbon emissions associated with their Google Cloud platform usage. The announcements come at a time when enterprises are working to improve their ESG initiatives and reporting. Investors, employees, and customers are looking at these efforts to help differentiate who they want to invest in, work for, and buy from in today's market. Governments are also considering the creation of laws and regulations around ESG reporting and standards for public and private companies. As an example, the U.S. House of Representatives passed an ESG reporting bill over the summer that would apply to all public companies. Separately, the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission has indicated that ESG disclosure regs will be a central focus of the new SEC chair. Gartner reported that organizations are ranking regulatory risk related to ESG disclosures higher. It reaches the second position on Gartner's rankings in its Emerging Risks Monitor report based on a survey of 153 senior executives in the second quarter of 2021.
This story comes from PR Newswire. Thycotic Centrify, a leading provider of cloud identity security solutions formed by the merger of privileged access management leaders Thycotic and Centrify, Yesterday released new research confirming that ransomware has become a preferred method for cyber attacks, with nearly two of three companies, about 64%, surveyed admitted to being victims of ransomware attack in the last 12 months. The report titled 2021 State of Ransomware Survey and Report, Preventing and Mitigating the Skyrocketing Costs and Impacts of Ransomware Attacks, is based on survey responses from 300 U.S.-based IT business decision makers. It further reveals that more than four out of five, approximately 83%, of ransomware attack victims felt they had no choice but to pay ransomware demands to restore their data. The report highlights how organizations are responding to the growing threats of ransomware attacks, including 73% have seen cybersecurity budgets increase due to ransomware threats. 93% are allocating special budget to fight ransomware threats. 50% said they experienced loss of revenue and reputational damage from an attack. 42% indicated they had lost customers as the result of an attack. Quote, "Our research shows ransomware is a threat to organizations of all sizes and levels of sophistication," said Art Gilliland, CEO of Thycotic Centrify. Continuing the quote, "The first line of defense should be solutions that secure privileged access, including multi-factor authentication and other methods of enforcing zero trust to keep would-be cyber criminals contained and limit the damage they can inflict," unquote. The report features three main takeaways with recommendations and resources to help mitigate damage from an attack. With so many organizations victimized by ransomware attacks, it is more important than ever that organizations prioritize creating an incident response plan to avoid being added to the growing list that have paid the ransom demand. While increasing cybersecurity budgets for network and cloud security solutions, organizations must also understand and prioritize the requirements for preventing exploit escalation with PAM security that enforces least privileged access. Preventing ransomware attacks by practicing basic cybersecurity hygiene, such as regular backups, timely patching, MFA, and password protection, is essential. However, PAM policies that make least privileged access a priority enable security teams to identify the attack entry point, understand what's happening, help remediate, and ultimately protect restored data. Well, will 2022 show a downward trend with federal agencies now treating ransomware like terrorism, or will it just be rhetoric? My soapbox is about stronger authentication systems, user education starting at the time any computer education actually happens in schools, and stop rewarding hackers with jobs if they're caught.
Could this be the Y2K bug all over again? Or if you're a system or network administrator, you may know that security, identification, networks, and everything that makes the internet go depends on accurate timekeeping. Now, some systems rely on the global positioning system, GPS appliances, and the GPSD daemon to tell the exact time. And a nasty bug has been uncovered in GPSD that's going to pop up on October 24th. 2021. Now, if left unpatched, it's going to switch your time to sometime in March 2002, and your system will crash with a resounding kaboom. Now, let's give you a quick overview of how things work here. Now, each time, Earth time itself is actually not absolute. Earth spin speeds vary in response to geological events, and the International Earth Rotation and Reference Systems track this every few years, and it adds a leap second to the year. Now, this is done to the Coordinated Universal Time, or UTC, which is the standard universal time system. Now, UTC is used by the Internet's Network Time Protocol, NTP, and in turn, NTP is used to keep all internet-connected devices in sync with each other. Now, how does NTP know what time it is? Well, by synchronizing NTP servers with atomic clocks. And NTP is based on a hierarchy of levels, which each level is assigned to something called stratum. Now, question is, how do stratum servers sync up with clocks? Well, many of them use GPSD. There's the point. Now, this service daemon monitors one of or more GPSs for location, courses, velocity, and for all our purposes, the most important element, it actually tracks time. Now, recently, it was discovered that a bug in the time rollback, aka GPS week rollover sanity checking code scheduled for November 2038, will instead trigger this Sunday and course 1024 to be subtracted from October 24th, 2021 week number. Now, in other words, a lot of computers are in for a quick, sharp visit to March 2002. So check your systems now for this problem. And if, like most of us, you're relying on someone upstream from you to actually correct the time, check with them and make sure they've taken care of this forthcoming trouble as well. Well, folks, that does it for the blips. Next up, we have a really great host roundtable. We're going to talk a little bit about managed desktops. But before we do have to thank a really great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's Thingst Canary. The last thing everyone wants or needs right now is a data breach. I definitely know that. Now, rather than the villain lying in wait, you may have a hero. Thingst Canary is waiting for them. Now, companies usually find out too late they've been compromised, even after they've already spent millions of dollars on IT security. Now, Canary has completely changed the game. It's designed to be installed and configured in minutes, and pardon the pun, left to its own devices. You don't have to think about it. Now, attackers prowling a targeted network look for juicy content. You know, they will browse your Active Directory to file servers and explore file shares looking for documents. They'll even try default passwords against network devices and web services, and will scan for open services across your network. Now, that's where Canaries will give you visibility. Canaries can be deployed throughout your entire network, and you can make them look identical to a router, a switch, a NAS server, a Linux box, or a Windows server, so attackers won't know they've actually been caught. Now, Thingst Canaries are designed to look like the things that hackers want to get to. You can put fake files on them or even enroll them in Active Directory. And when attackers investigate further, they give themselves away and you're instantly notified. Now, you can also use Canary tokens. Now, these are tiny tripwires that you can drop in hundreds of places on your network. They'll follow the Thingst Canary philosophy of trivial to deploy with a ridiculously high quality of signal. Now, if an alert happens, you'll notify the way you want. Plus, you won't be inundated with those false alarms. Now, you can get alerts in many different ways. You can get alerts via email or text message directly on the console, in Slack, or using webhooks or syslog, or even just their API. You choose the option that works best for your business. Now, it's important that companies know two things when it comes to data breaches. One, hackers will usually take the path of least resistance, and that's typically your staff. We definitely talk about that a lot. And two, it takes on average 191 days for a company to realize that there's been a data breach. That's too long, and Thingst Canary solves that problem for you. People behind Canary have been in the security game for almost two decades and have trained companies, militaries, and governments on how to break into networks. That's the knowledge they've used to build Thingst Canary. Thingst Canaries are deployed all over the world on all seven continents and are one of the best tools against data breaches. Visit canary.tools/twit, and for just $7,500 per year, you'll get five Canaries, your own hosted console, upgrades, support, and maintenance. And if you use code TWIT in the How Do You Hear About Us box, you'll get 10% off the price for life. We know you'll love Thingst Canary, but if you're not happy, you can always return your Canaries with their 2-month money back guarantee for a full refund. That's canary.tools/TWIT and enter the code TWIT in the How Do You Hear About Us box. And we thank Thingst Canary for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's now time for the host roundtable. We have a really great topic, and I feel like it's going to take a pretty good amount of time. So let's start it out. Obviously, managed desktops, or even the new desktop as a service offering, is something that's been offered around the industry to really help organizations scale it, especially in the cases of remote workers. But it strives to tackle lots of things, lots of challenges, and we're definitely getting to those, especially what some of those being security. Now, they promise things like making sure your OSs are up to date, your applications are up to date, making sure you're more secure, and that's all kind of abstracted away. Now, there's lots of been variances over the years with this, but I first want to start off by kind of framing this all up and understanding just what managed desktops are and what they're supposed to solve. Chibert, I want to throw this to you first, and then we can kind of have a go back and forth here of just where managed desktops apply. But can you give us just a quick summary of what it is and maybe some applications you've seen here?
Well, I like to call managed desktops the hands-off approach. The idea is, I don't want to have to touch the physical computer. all I have, you know, I'm using whatever it is, whether it's a tablet, whether it's a phone, whether it's a thin laptop, whether it's a full laptop, it doesn't matter. The pieces that actually run the apps, the pieces that run everything and provide my presentation is physically in the data center. So the managed desktop in this case means I can have things pushed to me. I don't have to have my computer on, so that those critical patches, you know, that have to happen for security or what have you, or maybe a SASE update, or maybe there's something wrong with a multi-factor authentication. It doesn't matter if the computer's on, your computer's on. In the data center, even if the virtual machine isn't running, most managed desktop systems will still allow you to patch those. Now, in my mind, managed desktop also means I can create my desktop or whichever desktop I'm using from a gold image, meaning I can go and spend the time, create one perfect image, and then spin off additional. So if user one and user two both want to go and, you know, get started, so they get hired, they get brought into the company, PR goes and submits a provisioning request to IT, and their system is actually spun off from that gold image. Now, moving forward, the management means I can push, I can update, I can add, I can subtract, I can move things around, and more importantly, I can archive. So for instance, within the academic community, I was using a lot of this managed desktop so that we could have a faculty member create an image that was perfect for teaching their class. But it's only taught in the fall and spring. During the summer, he goes to Bora Bora, has a great time, but we don't want him taking up a ton of space. So I can archive those desktops off. And when he comes back in the fall, I can bring them back onto primary storage and the class is ready to go again. So managed desktops for someone that's been around the industry for a while is going to feel an awful lot like a mainframe, because I have central control. I have the ability to push and pull, and I have the ability to, oh my God, something's wrong, shut it down right now. And I don't have to walk to maybe a mile to a different building on the campus. So there's a lot of promise. But like Lou said, there's been a lot of people trying different things. And I think that's one of the topics. Where have we been? Where are we going? And why do we think managed desktops are finally going to happen? We'll see. Let's talk about it.
Indeed. Curtis, what do you think? I mean, obviously, we've seen a lot of vendors out there developing different ways to do enterprise desktop builds. And we've seen a lot more movement here, whether it's Citrix or Microsoft, trying to build out these more and more. But there's still complications with these. So what are you seeing in the industry?
Well, you know, I think it's important to note that the basic arguments in favor of virtual desktops haven't changed in 20 years. They are certainly more manageable, more easily manageable than having 10,000 discrete machines sitting out there. They are certainly more maintainable. And from certain sorts of threats, they are absolutely more secure. So we have to ask, why hasn't everyone gone to them already? There's several answers, and these are not changing so much. One of them is that we love the idea that when the network goes down, we can still be productive. Well, how do you do that? Well, you have a classic laptop or desktop that operates on its own, has its own applications, has its own memory, its own storage, all of that. And while the world is crashing down about our ears, we can still make that spreadsheet happen. The other thing is simple inertia. One of my grandfathers had a saying a long, long time ago that good enough is hard to beat. And for most values of enterprise employee computing, the traditional desktop is good enough. It does what we need it to do. The networking does what we need it to do. And everything happens. We can't discount how much it costs to retrain employees when changes are made. Now, Lou, you will have been aware of this. If you just change the order of things in a menu, the users, the enterprises, scream bloody murder because so many of the users in the business don't really look at what the menus say, don't look at what the checklist. They know that if they go up to the fourth item, they click. When something comes down, they go to the bottom of the list and click. And if the things in those positions change, they're lost. You know, suddenly they have just sold 40,000 contract units of corn rather than putting in an order for light bulbs in the office. So the arguments pro and con haven't changed. So what has changed? One of them is that we do have better, nearly ubiquitous broadband networking. And I'm going to say that's defined by the American version of broadband. But it's much more common. Many, many more employees do have something that approximates broadband at their home. So the connectivity issues aren't nearly as dire. The other thing that I would say has changed is the expectation, and that comes down to Chrome. You know, Apple for years got a leg up on Macintosh sales into the enterprise because so many people had used Macs as students. Now the Chromebook has taken a big chunk of the education market, and you have people who are getting into the employment market who are used to the model of the Chromebook, where you don't have the local applications, you don't have the local storage. That matters. So I think we may be approaching an inflection point, although I will readily admit those are words that I've said at least three or four times in the past.
Right. Dan Cheever, you kind of brought this up a little bit. You know, we talked a little bit about like some of the applications that you have used when it comes to managed desktops. But I think it's also good to talk about where these come from. Like what's the main use case here and like where kind of how it's progressed until now?
Well, I think my personal spin on this is one of the reasons why managed desktops failed the first time was money. There was a lot of confusion. I actually asked four different Microsoft salespeople and got four different answers on what it was going to cost me for 500 FTEs to get licenses just for Microsoft Windows. And then I got six different answers on what it was going to cost for Office. So it started going crazy, and I started calling different people. I actually got to a product manager, and I could not get a consistent answer. So for a university environment, not getting a firm answer, basically we had already bought four servers, good size ones, very expensive, some firewalls and all this stuff. We actually had Citrix installed with a Citrix gateway and all this kind of stuff. And then we got changing answers on what it was going to cost us. And it got to the point where the decision was finally made. It's too expensive. Also, it's too complicated to manage. they were going to try and manage it with a part-time student. I said, you guys are smoking something. Not going to happen. And no, you know, apologies to Citrix, but your system is complicated. It's got a lot of moving parts. It's got a lot of widgets. It's got a lot of dials. There's a lot of things that need to be touched on a fairly regular basis to make a virtual desktop or a managed desktop environment keep working. Now, in Microsoft's defense, there is still, it's a ginormous corporation, and there was a lot of people asking the same question. In fact, there was that same question posed to Satya Nadella during a press conference over in Seattle someplace. I think it was at the big sales office for Microsoft. And shall we say, the message has become quite a bit more consistent. I can now ask and get a consistent answer. So when I attempted to do this again for a very large internet service provider on a national basis, we were actually talking very strongly about doing managed desktops on a set-top box using a DOCSIS VDI client, which could be very interesting. And it was still too expensive for management. It was reasonable, but it was still too expensive because of the way the licenses were counted. Now, let's get to current day. Windows 365. The pricing model is dramatically more realistically. The user interfaces are gorgeous. It is as if I had the Citrix workspace or a SharePoint portal, but it's now baked in together so that my users can actually choose. They might have three or four different desktops that they would use to do their job. They might have one for an engineering personality. They might have one for a PR and so forth. There's a lot of really cool things. I think management at Microsoft has finally made a few decisions to be more consistent about things. And the cool thing about the new Windows 365 interface is for those people that are used to Windows, it's all familiar. Chrome OS drove a lot of people crazy because it's so radically different. And I think life is going to get really interesting. I'm looking forward to Windows 365, especially good for international users so that I don't have any PII sitting out there that could get grabbed by someone unfriendly. I used it for a architectural project at the University of Hawaii where we went and actually ran AutoCAD Revit, a 3D model on iPads with the students going around and measuring things and actually modifying 3D models so we could have an as-built 3D image of, I think it was 90% of the buildings at the University of Hawaii Manoa. So we'll see. It's different. It's going to take some getting used to. I think the market is going to be the deciding force. But I am going to be buying a Windows 365 subscription if for no other reason than I need to be able to write about it.
That's right. Yeah, you know what? I actually want to play a little bit of devil's advocate on this service a little bit. I want to get you guys' thoughts on it. Because a lot of times there are deal breakers that come to specific enterprises here because they've already deployed sometimes existing virtual desktop rollouts and they built them using their own designed virtual desktop platform. They have very granular controls that traditional desktop as a service systems have. But, you know, Windows 365, it does offer a lot of things, but some of the things that it doesn't offer right now are, you know, like for instance, the ability to globally configure system resources or deploy both single and multi-user sessions or network subnetting and routing and even desktop auto scaling. So there's some things that maybe or might not be there yet. And this might be a takeaway that not all one size size fits all kind of thing. Now, Kurt, are you seeing this from the world of virtual desktops, that organizations that are already using it might not go to some of these managed services like something that Citrix is offering or even that Microsoft is offering because it already works for them and they already are understand the pricing model and how they can manage it going forward? Because a lot of these do offer some things around managing more things for you, but that's with some limitation. So are you seeing that at all in the industry?
Yeah, and you brought up something that I don't think we can discount in all of this. That's the pricing model. I think if someone is not inside the licensing group of a major enterprise, they really have no idea just how complex the pricing model can be for any enterprise software. Something that is deployed to thousands of desktops, like an Office or Office 365, is its own special level of complexity. But, you know, any OS, any big managed service that is going to be touched by a large portion of the enterprise population, any application that's going to be deployed to a lot of desktops, any service that has a ton of seats, these have entire teams within the organization that are employed solely to deal with the licensing terms. And if you do understand the licensing terms for a particular product or service, then changing to a different pricing model for a different product is an entirely different equation than it is for an individual. And at that point, it can't be just a little bit advantageous to make that change from an economic standpoint. It has to be massively advantageous. And for many of the things that we're talking about, if the standard was it saves us $1 per desktop per month, well, that would be nice, but it's not enough. It's going to have to be able to save 20, 30, 40% per year in order to overcome the inertial resistance and the resistance that exists in the overhead to manage any one of these. So I think that what we're seeing is a lot of incremental improvements. And as companies come online, new organizations growing up, I think many of them are starting to adopt the virtual model for their initial deployments. But for the rest, it's going to be a gradual process where they have to see tons of advantage before they're really ready to make the jump into something completely new.
All good points. Well, we definitely have a lot more to talk about here. And I think Cheebert wants to say a little bit more about the pricing model as well. But before we get to that, we do have to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech. And that's Bitwarden. Now, Bitwarden's really cool. It's the only open source password manager that can be used at home, at work, or on the go, and it's trusted by millions. Now, you empower your employees to follow password management best practices. With Bitwarden, you can securely store credentials across personal and business worlds. Now, every Bitwarden account begins with the creation of a personal vault. Now, use Bitwarden for your business. It's fully customizable. Adjust features using enterprise policies to adapt to your business needs. You can even use Bitwarden Send, a fully encrypted method to transmit sensitive information, whether it's text or files, directly to anyone. Now, team members can generate unique and secure passwords for every site, and you'll get enterprise-grade security and compliance. That's GDPR, CCPA, HIPAA, and SOC 2 compliance. And their end-to-end encrypted vault helps mitigate phishing attacks by storing passwords and much, much more. Now, Bitwarden now has new tools for managed service providers. That's right. Bitwarden's new provider portal allows MSPs to easily manage clients' password management services all in one place. It allows for simple access to each separate organization. And then two new user types allows for delegation of management and ensure clear differentiation between the service provider and client users. Interested in a business plan? Well, Bitwarden has plans that will work for you. Now, their Teams organization option is $3 a month per user, where you can share private data securely with your coworkers, department, or the entire organization. Now, for enterprises, use Bitwarden's enterprise organization plan for just $5 a month per user. Plus, they also have their free organization plan, which includes two users who can store and share secure passwords. Now, Bitwarden believes that everyone should have access to basic password security tools. Now, individuals can use their basic free account forever for an unlimited number of passwords, or upgrade anytime to their premium account for less than $1 a month. Now, and if you're looking for a secure password storage for your entire family, well, the family organization option is definitely for you. Gives up to six users premium features for only $3.33 a month. Using the Bitwarden Cloud, you can get started in no time. Monitor and manage security vulnerabilities using the Bitwarden Vault Health Reports. Identify exposed, reused, weak, or potentially compromised passwords, as well as any items in your vault with inactive 2FA. Get started with a free Teams or Enterprise trial of Teams or Enterprise plan at bitwarden.com/twit, or try it for free across devices as an individual user. That's bitwarden.com/twit, and we thank Bitwarden for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, we've been talking a lot about virtual desktop, managed desktop, and Kurt brought up some really great points about you know, pricing models. Sheba, I want to throw it to you because I know you have some thoughts there.
Well, I actually used to work for a company, a startup, that built zero clients. Now, let's define that really quick. A thin client actually has an operating system, probably Android or Linux or something like that. HP is absolutely famous for those things. So is Weiss. And but a zero client actually has no technical operating, no general purpose operating system. You can't install apps on it. A thin client, you can install specialized apps. A zero client has nothing. They're only designed to be clients for virtual desktops or virtual servers, one or the other or both. Now, the interesting thing was when Dell Corporation bought Weiss, who are absolutely famous for thin and zero clients, they brought out a client. I wish I could find it. It's still packed away in my box, but it was about this size. This is actually a Chrome stick, but the Dell client was about this big and had the same concept. Had a US HDMI port and a USB in the end, and you literally just plug it into a system, you know, a monitor, wireless keyboard and mouse, and you log in, you issue your credentials. There was a way to push out configs to these before you dropped it. Literally, you could stick it into a padded envelope and send it to your employees via interoffice mail. So that comes back to the cost that Kurt was talking about. The big argument from the folks at Dell, Weiss, HP, the company I work for, a whole bunch of other folks, is the cost of a physical desktop with a full operating system is actually a lot higher than most people realize. Just having someone from IT to physically come to your desktop starts off, someone estimated about $265 just to show up. And then an hourly, and then sometimes they have to go back and get parts and do this, do backups, do restore. What happens if there's a malware on it? How do you clean it? And so forth. This has been the number one argument on why virtual desktops are better and cheaper and less expensive. But the original message that managers heard was, oh, it's going to be cheaper. I get to save a ton of money. And that's the pitfall that I ran into with University of Hawaii College when they said they wanted a virtual desktop environment, then started adding up all the pieces, all the licenses, all the specialized servers, all the maintenance of the servers, and so forth. That's changing. Okay, so this is why I'm so hot on the concept of Windows 365. I'm paying for server maintenance, but I'm only paying a tiny part. I'm paying my portion of maintaining it. I'm not having to have IT staff specifically just to manage a data center. That's where things start getting less expensive. Now, one of the other things that surprised, absolutely flabbergasted a lot of people was the clients for a virtual desktop are not free. So let's go in. Microsoft had this really cool protocol called VDI, Virtual Desktop Infrastructure. And it was the first one that I ran across that actually allowed you to share graphic processors. So I could do real 3D graphics. In fact, that was one of the big things. Everybody else in the industry now has that. But not everyone has decided to make those client protocols free. So for instance, VMware is another one that you have to pay a royalty to Teradici Corporation. So every single client, someone has to absorb that cost. So that's another hidden cost. So anyway, bringing this back to what Kurt said, there was an effort to make the clients really inexpensive, to handle the cost of maintaining a physical desktop, something that I could have just like this, and I could send it in a padded envelope. The idea was make it cheaper. It wasn't enough. The original VDI didn't work. The company that I was working for said, see ya, and laid me off. And thin clients, I keep talking about them. I keep talking about virtual desktops. I keep talking about managed desktops as being something we should be looking at because it gives us the ability to have better control, to have timely updates. All the great arguments that Kurt and I have been talking about. But maybe, just maybe, the last little bit, the last cost item, how do we manage the desktop without having to make a giant cost leap on per seat cost? So I think if someone in the Windows 365 group is listening, don't forget, just because you need to have your license fees, that's good. But small companies don't have a direct Microsoft sales rep. So if you price it too high, we're going to have a repeat of that whole thing where VDI failed and failed again. So we'll see. I'm looking forward to it. The client, the physical clients are getting less expensive. They're getting smaller. They're getting easier to manage. HP has done an amazingly good job, as has Del Weiss, on managing thin and zero clients, being able to update them, manage them, turn them off, turn them on, and so forth. But now the back end needed to change. And that is the number one reason why I'm so excited about Windows 365 and commercial.
Thank you, Jibbert. Curtis, did you have something to add to that? I don't know.
Not dramatically. I think that Brian, you know, laid out his points really, really well. The only thing that I would add at all is getting back to the issue of, and this is something that people who aren't in big enterprises tend to not understand. It's not just the absolute cost of the per seat license. I think a lot of companies will talk a great deal about lowering that per seat cost, trying to find ways of arriving at what the cost is. It's the complexity, and the complexity is often in response to things that specific clients have asked for. But what they end up with is this mix and match thing where just figuring out which of the software companies' models you want to use for your pricing is a full-time job for multiple individuals. It's funny. The thing that I will add, years ago at a Gartner conference, I saw a near standing ovation from about 2,500 CIOs when Steve Ballmer, stood up and said that one of their Microsoft's priorities for that year was simplifying the pricing for Windows and Office, not reducing it, simplifying it. And that brought a standing ovation. So that lets you know just how complex these things can be.
Indeed, they are definitely complex. Well, when we come back, we do have to talk a little bit more about VDI and some managed desktop topics. But before we do have to thank one more sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's CrowdStrike. Now, you may have seen the headlines, and we talk about it all the time here on Twit. Ransomware attack after ransomware attack holding businesses hostage. It can feel like it's only a matter of time before they come for you, and you'll have to decide, do you pay or do you lose everything? Now, what if you had a third option? What if you could defeat your adversaries before the fight even started? With CrowdStrike, you're not alone in the battle against ransomware. Now, a secure future demands a shared defense. That's why CrowdStrike's Falcon platform uses their threat graph powered by advanced AI to analyze behavior on your devices, servers, and cloud workloads to find the threats and stop them. Now, their security platform delivers the industry's most powerful set of tools to fight today's most sophisticated cyber attacks, all delivered via the cloud through a lightweight, intelligent agent. Now, Forrester study finds Falcon Complete delivers 403% return on investment with 100% confidence. Now, CrowdStrike harnesses the power of every click, every action, every ally to grow stronger and stop cyber threats before they can stop you. Now, Falcon Complete stops breaches every hour of every day through expert management, threat hunting, monitoring, and remediation, and is backed by CrowdStrike's breach prevention warranty. They don't just say it here, they guarantee it for Falcon Complete managed customers who receive a warranty covering up to $1 million in the event of a breach. Terms and conditions apply. Now, we talked with CTO Michael Sintonis, and he explained what makes CrowdStrike different and sets them apart from others.
I think what makes us unique is we've always tried to stay true to our mission to stop breaches. And today, it's never been more relevant. When CrowdStrike was founded a decade ago, organizations and governments were being breached and technology that they were using was not protecting them. So our goal was to build the fundamentals that organizations need to defend themselves and to stop breaches. And that is everything that we focus on. We focus on the customer, we focus on stopping breaches, and we make sure that we continually innovate to stay ahead of the threat for the benefit of our customers.
Gartner Magic Quadrant named CrowdStrike a leader for endpoint protection platform for 2021. Join the fight and experience the power of Falcon platform for free today at CrowdStrike.com/twit. That's CrowdStrike.com/twit. CrowdStrike, because what we've built together is worth defending together. And we thank CrowdStrike for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, we've been talking about managed desktop and VDI. Lots more to talk about here. And I want to throw this to Kurt, because when you're implementing these services, there's some pretty complex backends with this, right?
There really is. We tend to look at VDI as being something that will simplify what's happening out at the endpoint. You know, all of a sudden, you're not dealing with the separate operating system out there and the separate applications out there. It's all one thing coming out to a thin client, but that doesn't mean the complexity goes away. It comes back in to the back end of whatever system, whether it's a cloud back end, whether it's an on-prem back end, whether it's some combination of those. And it's really interesting. I spent some time this week at Splunk's .conf. And one of the themes there was what all of the virtualization that people are starting to see in the enterprise, what all of the hybrid cloud architecture that we're seeing is doing for backend complexity. And here's one of the takeaways, that things are rapidly reaching a point where analytics automation, security automation, and management automation are no longer options. We're reaching a point of complexity when human beings simply are not fast enough to keep up. And that leads to some interesting situations, because if the managers are not fast enough to keep up, that means there are going to be gaps. And we know what happens in the gaps. That's where attackers like to go. And it means that they're not going to be as efficient, as effective as they might be. It also means that now, in addition to managing all of the various operating systems and applications for the endpoints, you've got to manage the automation tools that let it all stay up and running. So this is to say that it is not something where the complication simply goes away. It's getting moved around. Companies will get to choose where they want the complication to live, but they don't get to choose a life with no complication at all.
You know, speaking of complexity, I've actually built a Microsoft VDI solution. I've built a VMware VDI solution. I built a Citrix VDI solution. Lots of moving parts and lots of places where you actually have to have authentication. And the drag is, there's enough moving parts, enough dials, enough things to configure that you start getting into, that's good enough. Let's just set it as a pseudo admin just so we can get it working. And maybe I'll remember to back off the security rights for that. When I was building that, I saw so many places where Citrix didn't really explain what kind of security that role needed. A Microsoft RDP gateway, in order to use VDI and so forth, wasn't really well documented. So lots and lots of pieces, lots of complexity, lots of things generating logs. And I totally agree with Splunk. There is so much complexity to that back end that you have to have something to help you sort forest from the trees. And I'd like to see some more things happening. I'd like to see more cooperation. The complexity of these solutions were so high. We actually interviewed Ericom. They're an Israeli company quite a while back. I went with them because their solution actually included a gateway so that I could have HTML5-based RDP, and they also licensed in the Teradici client so I could do it for VMware and so forth. There's a lot of complexity, and what hasn't been really happening is that the controls, the monitoring, the logging, being able to do things and sort through it hasn't been keeping up. And I'd like to see that happen. And Windows 365 has some interesting concept. I think it's ready for home use. I'm not quite sure it's ready to scale beyond small businesses. I'm sure the controls will be there eventually, because they exist in the Microsoft product line. I think it just needs to be integrated in, polished, and made so that it doesn't take a dedicated warm body just to manage. I think that's going to be the problem. The complexity is so high, we have to have warm bodies just to manage, say, a gateway.
Fantastic. Lots of great topics here today, guys. Really great information. Hopefully everyone in our audience gets some information out of this episode. But unfortunately, all good things come to an end. Folks, you've done it again. You sat through another hour of the best thing enterprise podcast in the universe. So definitely tune your podcatcher to Twyatt. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, starting with our co-hosts here, the all knowledgeable co-hosts, starting with our very own Mr. Brian Chiebert. What's going on for you in the coming weeks, and where can people find you?
I'm actually uncovering cool things to play with. I have a teeny tiny little Linux server. It's a little bigger than a 12-ounce soda pop can, but it has four 2.5-inch SATA drives in there in a RAID 5 array, all being driven by Raspberry Pi 4. And I've got a custom cutout in a little Pelican case that I'm going to use that as my travel server. So I'm building that this week. Anyway, you folks have been spectacular on sending us show ideas. Some of them harder to fulfill than others. Some we'll see about getting to. But throw it at me. I'm ADVNETLAB. On Twitter, Advanced Net Lab. I'm also Chiebert, spelled C-H-E-E-B-E-R-T at twit.tv. Send the show booking ideas to me, and don't flood poor Lou. Or if you really want to talk and send notes to all the hosts, send it to Twyatt at twit.tv. We'd love to hear from you. And someday when our viewer in McMurdo Sound catches up on a recorded episode, I'd love to hear from you. Anyway, take care all. Have a great time.
That'd be exciting to hear from them. Well, folks, we also have to thank our very own Mr. Curtis Franklin. Curtis, what's going on for you in the coming week? Where can people find you and all your work?
Well, as always, people can find me over on Twitter at KG4GWA. And I mentioned these two webinars and two virtual events that are coming up. I didn't mention the fact that every one of these is free. I'm going to have links to them on my Twitter account. Going to be a lot of great information. As a matter of fact, the event next week I'm speaking, that's the same virtual event where Brian is going to be speaking as well. I'll get that link up. Would love it if lots of folks from the Twyatt Riot came over and joined us. I think it's going to be really worthwhile. I've got a couple of good articles that, well, I hope they're going to be good articles that I'm going to be publishing links to over on LinkedIn. So plenty going on. And if there's something that you would like to know about the world of enterprise security management, please drop me a note. I would love to do my best to answer your questions.
Thank you, guys. Well, folks, we also have to thank you as well. You're the person who drops in each and every week to watch and to get your enterprise news. We want to make it easy for you to watch and listen to catch up on your iTunes enterprise news. So go to our show page right now, twit.tv/Twyatt. There you'll find all the amazing back episodes, the notes that we do, co-host information, guest information, and the links of the stories. But more importantly, next to those videos there, you'll get those helpful subscribe and download links. Support the show by getting your audio version, your video version of your choice. Listen on any one of your devices or use any one of your podcast applications, because we're definitely on all of them. So definitely subscribe and join the fun and be part of the movement. Plus, you may have heard, we also have Club Twit. That's right. It's a members-only ad-free podcast service with a bonus Twit Plus fee that you can't get anywhere else. And it's only $7 a month. Now, one of my favorite things definitely is the Club Twit exclusive access to the members only Discord channel, because they really find interesting tech topics on there, conversations, content. You know, they're masters of the gifts on there. Love it. Really great part of Club Twit. So definitely join and be part of the movement. Go to twit.tv/Club Twit. Plus, Club Twit now offers corporate group plans. That's right. It's a great way to give your team access to the ad free tech podcasts. And it also gives plans for with just 5 members at a discounted rate of $6 each per month. And you can add as many seats as you like. And that's really a great way for whether it's your IT department or your developers or your tech teams to stay up to date with access to all of our podcasts. So definitely do that. It's just like regular membership, so they can also join the Discord server and get that Twit Plus bonus feed as well. So definitely sign up for that at twit.tv/clubtwit. Plus, it's that time of year where you're putting together the list of our best of episodes. That's right. We want to hear from you and get some of your picks. So head over right now to twit.tv/best of. There's the form there, and give us your picks, because we definitely want to know what some of your best episodes are of Twit and Twiet and all the great episodes and all the great podcasts we hear on here on Twit. Now, after you subscribe, definitely impress your friends, your coworkers, your family members with the gift of Twiet, because we talk a lot about some fun tech topics on this show. And we definitely think that if you give them the gift of Twiet, they'll find it interesting and fun as well. So definitely have them subscribe as well. Now, if you already subscribed, we also do this show live on 1:30 p.m. Pacific time on Fridays. Right now it's happening at live.twit.tv. Come see how the pizza's made, the behind the scenes, all the fun stuff and all the banter that we have during the show and after the show. Come see the live stream and be part of that fun. But if you're going to watch the live stream, you also should join in our IRC channel as well, irc.twit.tv. We have a lot of great characters in there and lots of great topics and chats going on in there during the show. So we really enjoy it. So definitely be part of the live stream and the live chat at irc.twit.tv. Definitely hit me up at twitter.com/LouMM. There I post all my enterprise tidbits. DM me some show ideas if you have them. And plus, I have some great conversations with people like you. And if you want to know a little bit more about what I do at Microsoft, definitely go check out developers.microsoft.com/office. There we post all the latest and greatest ways to customize your Office solutions and make it more productive for you. Definitely check out Office Scripts. It's the latest and greatest ways to create macros online using TypeScript. You can actually edit them right there in the editor online on your Excel online documents. Check that out. It's really fun, really great. You can actually run them unattended. You can periodically run them throughout the day. Really cool stuff. So definitely check that out. Now, I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to Leo and Lisa. They continue to support This Week in Enterprise Tech each and every week, and we couldn't do this show without them. So thank you to all their support over the years. And also thank you to all the engineers and staff at Twit. And of course, I want to thank Mr. Brian Chee one more time. He's not only our co-host, but he's also our tireless producer. He does all the bookings for the show and the plannings for the show, and we really couldn't do this show without him. Thank you, Chiebert, for all your support. And before we sign out, we have to thank our editor for today, Anthony. Thank you, Anthony, because you're going to make us look good after the fact. And of course, the guy who makes us look good during the fact is our TD. He's the talented Mr. Ant Pruitt. He does that fabulous show, Hands-On Photography. And what happened on Hands-On Photography this week? What kind of topics you had?
Well, sir, Mr. Lou, people have been asking me about wildlife photography, and I said, you know what? Anybody can do it. Just go outside. So that's your first tip. And then the next tip is go listen to the show, twit.tv/hop, and you'll see that you can capture some shots of hummingbirds and all kinds of wildlife just right outside your door. Go outside, folks. Just go shoot.
That was a beautiful shot. Well, I'd say do both. Go outside and listen to the show.
Thank you kindly.
Indeed, indeed. Well, until next time, I'm Louis Maresca, just reminding you, if you want to know what's going on in the enterprise, just keep quiet.
Do you have an iPhone, an Apple Watch, an iPad, or any number of Apple devices? Well, you have got to check out iOS Today with me, Micah Sargent, and Rosemary Orchard. We cover all things iOS and help you get the most out of your devices.